This is a Clarissa Driven morning drive with Homefront Communications on Monday, December 7, 2009 at 8 a.m. Central Time. Leroy Baylor.
What are the serious issues that we need to be aware of that we take as small things today as it relates to our children?
Sure. Well, you mentioned us taking some of these skills for granted. That's true. Most of us develop our speech and language and our general communication skills without a problem. But learning how to talk and learning how to understand what other people are saying, hands down, is the most difficult thing anybody will ever do. The speed at which the information we're hearing comes at us is so quick, and the speed at which we need to program a response to what the content of what they say is, and then program a motor act to say what we want to say, happens so quickly. And so, yes, most of us do this very fast. But for some of us, it is a little bit of a problem. So we can talk about some things that we can do to foster speech and language development in all children. One of the things that makes this so important is everything that we do, interpersonal relationships with friends and family, business relationships, how we learn in school, everything we do involves us being able to understand and communicate effectively.
Teresa, let's talk about some of the issues that, in a specific way, what are some of the problems, how are they manifested?
Meaning what might cause them?
In terms of speech, in terms of language,
mm-hmm.
and therefore the child's communication skills.
Okay, so in terms of causes, that's a really, really broad, let's say, topic. Sometimes we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there's no family history, so the mom and dad never had a problem. But they might have a child that for some reason isn't speaking or understanding on the level that they should. Sometimes there is a family problem where maybe mom or dad had some kind of language trouble growing up or some kind of learning disability.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there's other genetic issues. They might have Down syndrome. There might be some biochemical issue that's going on. And again, sometimes it's because there's a family history, but a lot of times there's just not. And we're not quite sure. It's a very young field, and we're learning more and more about brain development, more and more about communication and cognitive development. But we don't know why.
The manifestations,
mm-hmm.
What, regardless of the root cause, what are we seeing when we see a problem? How do we know it's a problem?
Okay, so let's talk about first what speech and language are, and then we can identify where the problems might fall.
Okay.
So when we talk about speech and language development, there's really two parts. There's speech and there's language. So let's talk about what speech is first. Speech, if you want to think about it in another way, is the physical act of talking and communication. And there's three parts or three major areas of speech. We have articulation. And that's how we produce sounds. Those are the sounds that we move our mouth, we move our lips, our tongue, our vocal cords vibrate to produce the sounds, and we call that articulation. So a child growing up might say ton instead of sun because they don't have the motor skills yet to produce the word on our level. So that's articulation.
Right.
The next area of speech where we might have trouble is in voice. So I mentioned my vocal folds before, and I just cleared my throat. You can tell my voice might be a little hoarse because it's early in the morning.
Okay.
So people might, if you scream a lot or if you smoke too much or you abuse your vocal folds by talking too loud and too much, you might get polyps or nodules, and it affects, as you can hear my voice, it affects the quality of my voice.
Okay.
So that's one part of speech where there could be trouble with a child. Then there's fluency, and that's how the rhythm of speech, how fluently and fluidly our words flow into one another. Sometimes we have pauses. Sometimes we repeat our words. We might repeat a whole word or part of a word. But and those hesitations and such are part of normal speech. We all do it, but there might be a point where people hesitate and pause so much that it really interferes with effective communication, and they might be a stutterer.
Got it.
So those are the areas of speech where we might see problems with children that we want to look out for. And we'll talk about what to look out for in a second, but let's jump to the other side of communication, which is language. So I mentioned speech is more of the physical act of communication. Language is more of the cognitive and understanding aspect. And when we talk about language, it could be oral, so I'm talking to you orally right now. It could be written, where you're reading something. Or it could be gestural, so people waving. You might have heard about American Sign Language. But whether it's oral, written, or gestural, what language is a rule system, a shared rule system that people use to communicate a message to someone else. So within language, there's a number of areas that we want to look out in children to see if they're developing correctly. So the first area of language we'll talk about is phonology, and that's the sounds that make up the words. So it's a rule system of sounds, and in English, for example, English phonological rules say you can put an E and a T together to create a word such as seat. So being able to understand how you can put sounds together to form a word is phonological knowledge, and that's an area that we want to look at as our children develop to make sure they're on par.
Phonological as in phonics?
Yeah, very similar, absolutely. Absolutely. So being able to understand those rules, figure them out, will have a big impact on what they physically produce from an oral standpoint, but also how they read and write.
Okay.
So moving up a notch in the language system, we have morphology. So what that is similar to phonology. It's groups of sound units. So, for example, in English, if we want to say that something happened in the past, we usually add the sound ed on the end. So,
yes.
Walk becomes walked.
Okay.
So, or if you want to describe an ongoing action, we usually add ing. So, run
okay.
would become running. So, that little morphological marker, that ed or that ing or the s that forms a plural.
Okay.
So that's morphology. So that's another area of language that we want to make sure children are developing. So that's something we can look out for.
Okay. Just pause right there.
Sure.
Morphology is as in morphing,
mm-hmm.
taking the root
yep.
and then adding the various endings to indicate time or occurrence of when something happened or is going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Or some kind of adding some kind of meaning.
Adding. Okay. Now, before you go to the next one, have we touched on three? Was the first one phrenology or
phonology? So like a phone.
Right.
A phone
okay.
is a sound.
Got you. Okay.
Yep.
Got it. Okay. All right. So we got two.
So that's phonology is the base, and then we move up a little, get a little more sophisticated, adding some meaning in there. And we call that morphology, so we're morphing the language a little bit more.
Oh, okay.
And then the next aspect of language is called semantics. And that's, it regards the meanings of words or sentences or conversations. And so an example might be the word course. And a course could mean a pathway that you might have taken to work today from your home.
Right.
Or a course could be a class that you go to university and study.
Got it.
Philosophy or something.
Right.
Semantics also, we talk about semantic features. So semantic features of a dog is that he's furry, he's got four legs and a long tail and a long snout. Those are the semantic, the meaningful features that make up a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much semantics. And then
all right, beautiful. Okay.
Great.
Excellent.
So moving up a little more sophisticated aspect of language, we have something called syntax. And syntax are the rules that govern how different words are combined to make up phrases and sentences. So in English, for example, we have a syntactic rule that says you can put a determiner plus a subject plus a verb plus another determiner plus an object, and that would create a sentence such as, the dog ate the bone. Where the is the determiner, the dog is the subject, what did he do, the verb, he ate, what, the bone.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another area of language that we want to look out for children, that they're ordering their words in the right way when they speak or keep or maintaining all those parts of speech that are required for proper syntax.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, the last aspect of language that we're looking at is called pragmatics. And pragmatics are the rules of a language that govern how we use it. And it could be anything from how much eye contact you make with a communication partner while you're speaking with them. It could be how far you stand from a communication partner. When you take turns in a conversation, and there's some subcultures where it's okay to just jump and scream and whoever's the loudest gets to talk. In some other cultures, you wait your turn. When someone pauses, then you can jump in. it's all different, and different cultures have different rules.
Right.
But basically, pragmatics rules how we use language. And we watch that also in children, making sure that they understand that aspect of language and can use that well as
okay.
well.
Okay, got it. Beautiful. Excellent. Okay, let's proceed with the class.
Sure.
those are the basic areas of language.
Mm-hmm.
And what are problems or challenges within those areas?
Okay.
Is that the progression from what you've given us?
Well, there's the basics. And what we have is developmental norms. So language is a universal skill. And so children pretty much across the globe are going to develop these speech and language milestones about the same time, regardless of whether they're learning Chinese or Farsi or English or what have you, or even a number of languages at once. So we have norms, this normative data that we can look at where we can judge if children are on target or not. So something that parents can do is there's organizations such as the American Speech, Language, and Hearing Association. And if you have internet access, lots of speech pathologists post what normal speech and language development looks like. So parents can go and look at these resources, see what a 1-month-old is doing, an 8-month-old is doing, a 12-month-old is doing, and then look at their child and see where they fall, how they're comparing. So if we could go kind of step by step, I can talk about what parents might expect at different age ranges.
Sure.
Okay, so the other thing I should probably say first is when we talk about communication, it's a two-way street. So meaning we're looking at what our kids are saying, but we're also looking at how they're understanding because we have language expression where we're talking, we might be saying something, we might be writing something, we could be gesturing something. We want to look at all those areas, and then we also want to look at language comprehension. So that's what our kids are hearing and what they're seeing and they're reading and how they're interpreting all that. So having said that, if we're looking at a real little one, and what I find most parents are surprised about when I talk with them about their child speech and language development is how early we really begin this process. Really, this development begins in utero. It begins when we're in the womb. We know little ones, babies, are hearing inside their mom's belly, so that's really the start of where they're starting to learn speech and language. So really from 0 to 3 months, let's talk about that first, and what we want to see from a language comprehension standpoint, we want to see that our little ones are maintaining eye contact when we talk with them and that they're attending to us when we speak with them and that they can focus on an object for a short period of time. Those are all prerequisite skills. Those are all skills that they have in order to learn to talk eventually.
Okay.
And that's from a comprehension standpoint for a little baby, maybe 0 to 3 months. On the expressive side, things that we want to look for in a child that age, we want to see if they're crying to get our attention. We want to see if they're vocalizing different sounds, you know, little cooing sounds. And we want to see that they might be vocalizing for pleasure. If you give them a little caress or a little tickle, if they make a sound that sounds to you like that they're happy or that they enjoy that. That's the expressive milestones we want to see in maybe a 0 to 3 month old child.
Okay.
Jumping up a notch, maybe in a child that's 3 to 6 months, from a language comprehension standpoint, things we want to look for is to see if they're looking for a sound source. If you drop a book or a door slams or if a speaker speaks, we want to see if they kind of look to see, ooh, where's that sound coming from?
Mm-hmm.
We want to see if they make a response when we say their name. Or maybe that they stop crying in response to a voice that's familiar to them. That suggests to us that they're attending to what we're saying. So again, this is a pre-linguistic or pre-language milestone or skill that we want to see in a 3 to 6 month old.
Right.
On the language expression side, we want to look at babbling, if they're starting to make different sounds, if they're making changes in their intonation that convey different feelings, or if they might interrupt somebody with a vocalization to see if they're starting to use their voice in a pre-communicative way. And that's basically what we're looking to see in a 3 to 6 month old.
Now, in a 3 to 6 month old,
mm-hmm.
part of that is, are they trying to speak with us? Or is that later?
It's starting to come where they're starting, like I said, they might make a squeal or something that interrupts us to kind of get our attention. And that is a form of communication. They're not saying, Mother, I would like some milk, please, because
right.
they don't have the words yet, but they might be starting to see that, I can control my behavior in a way that's going to make somebody else do something.
Okay, beautiful.
And that's what language is, and communication is all about.
Okay, got it. Okay.
So then if we move up to 6 to 8 months, we might want to see them from a comprehension standpoint. If somebody waves to them, that they wave goodbye, suggesting that they understand what this little ritual of hello, goodbye is about. We want to see that they might understand a gesture for being picked up. So if we put our arms down to them, that they put their arms up, they know that mommy's going to pick them up. Maybe being able to attend to music and enjoying that is something we want to see in a child 6 to 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
And from an expression standpoint, we want to see things like them trying to vocalize along in songs with us, again, vocalizing to get our attention, and maybe producing 4 different kinds of sounds. We're starting to see little sounds that we might hear in whatever their native language or languages are. And that's the 6 to 8 months. Range.
Okay, got it.
And if we look another step up, looking at a child who's 10 to 12 months, from a language comprehension standpoint, we want to see if they'll perform a familiar task on request, like go get your bottle, if they can identify maybe 2 body parts, or if they might look at a familiar object when you say it. If you say, where's Elmo? And they might look to see where Elmo is. So that's what we might expect from them from a comprehension standpoint. From a language expression standpoint, we want to see that babble start to morph into what we call jargon, where it's almost like they're putting all these little sounds together, almost like they're speaking. We might not understand this language that they're saying, but it's starting to take more of a form.
Got it.
Reminiscent of what you might see in adult speech. And at this point, we might get 1 or 2 words from them. And they might also start imitating some sounds that we say.
Got it.
From an expressive standpoint. And that's what, again, we might see in a 10 to 12-month-old child. And again, these are generalities and broad. All children develop at different rates, but so grossly these are things that we want to see.
Okay, great.
In a 12-month-old, we want to see them understanding maybe a few action words, run, jump, maybe understanding some prepositions, like your dog's under the table or your coat is on the chair. And another thing we'd want to see from a comprehension standpoint is looking at what they're doing in their play. So maybe they're banging, using 2 toys together and banging a saucepan with a spoon, something like that. And again, those are the comprehension language aspects we're looking at. From a language expression standpoint, we might want to see them use some real words within that jargon that they're creating.
Right.
We want to see them starting to ask and verbalize for things that they want or things that they need. And we might want to see them using up to 8 or 10 words at this point. And they don't have to be perfect words either. They're, the speech system, right now we're talking about language, the motor speech system develops a little differently, and they're not going to say things as clearly as we will until they're older.
Mm-hmm.
So again, we're looking though for consistency. So they might have a funny way to say Elmo. They might call him Melmo.
Right.
But as long as it looks like they're trying to use a real word there, that's okay.
Beautiful. Excellent.
Right. And so that's about what we'd see for a 12-month-old. For a child who's at 18 months, we'd want them to see, we want to see them identifying a number of objects, you know, show me spoon, show me shoe, show me coat, things like that, things that are familiar to them especially. We'd like to see them identifying maybe 4 body parts or so, and again, showing knowledge of verbs that are familiar to them, like eating or drinking or sleeping. And then from an expressive standpoint, what we'd like to see at this point is see them using words more than gestures. Sometimes if you might ask a 12-month-old, what do you want, they might point to the cookie. But by the time they're 18, we want to see them saying, cookie, give me cookie.
Got it.
We also want to see them imitating words fairly readily at this point as well. When we say something, but they repeat it. And maybe their expressive vocabulary would be about 10 to 15 words at this point, too.
Got it. Beautiful.
So that's up to 18 months. And we were talking about language, which, as I mentioned earlier, is different from speech development. Speech development is more of the motor aspect. And what we comprehend and what we understand and what we want to say is going to develop a whole lot faster than the motor muscular system we have in order to express those ideas.
Exactly. We call it thinking faster than you can speak.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And so that's why a new kind of craze, I would say, is using sign language with children.
Okay.
Because those grosser motor movements of their hands and arms are much more easy. It's easier for them to control those movements than the very fine, very precise movements of their tongue and their soft palate and their lips. So that's a way to maybe cut down some frustration, especially for an intelligent child who wants to communicate something to you and doesn't have the motor skills at their mouth level, let's say.
Okay.
But if we're looking at speech sound development, from 0 to 3 months, we want to hear them crying and making sounds to indicate that they're happy or maybe sounds of discomfort. They'll have a lot of isolated vowels and cooing, a lot of sounds in the back of their throat.
Mm-hmm.
And then from 3 to 6 months, we'll start to see patterns of babbling emerging. We might first see reduplicated babbling where it's the same vowel and consonant, so ga, 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 ma, 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 repeated. And then intonation patterns will start to go in there, and they'll use their voice going up and down, kind of just doing sound play and getting a feel for this and how to use this apparatus,
mm-hmm.
their mouth and their vocal folds and all that to generate speech. And then maybe around 6 to 8 months, we'll start to see some variegated babbling where they'll change the vowels and the consonants. So before, where we just had ma, 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 we might get mina, ma, ma, duga, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then around 10 to 12 months, I mentioned the jargon. Where all these little babblings start to have like a phrase intonation. So they might think,
okay.
And they're saying, I want to go out now.
Mm-hmm.
But they're kind of saying it in their own language. And I had mentioned earlier before, they might be using words that we can't understand, but we see a repetition of the same funny combination of sounds. We call them, you know, idiosyncratic kind of words. So they might, for their Elmo, they might call him Lulo or something,
right,
but he's always saying Lulo for Elmo. So it's their own word for Elmo as they're developing their
mm-hmm.
phonological system and getting control of this motor apparatus, their mouth. And then around 12 months, as I had mentioned, we start to see those single words and words that start to resemble more the targets, those sound targets that we make as adults. Again, they're using vocalizations and word-like structures more than gestures. And then around 18 to 24 months is when we start to see them put 2 words together in phrases. And so that's the skinny,
okay.
I guess, on speech and language development up to about 18 to 24 months.
Mm-hmm. Now, on the the child
mm-hmm.
attempting to say Elmo,
mm-hmm.
and he's saying it another way.
Mm-hmm.
That's his attempt. It does not mean that the child is, quote, dumb or stupid.
Oh, goodness, no. There's two things that's happening. He's developing his phonological system, so that speech sound system.
Mm-hmm.
So he's trying to figure it out, and the way he figures it out is he's hearing everybody else talking. So he's actually developing his own phonological system.
Mm-hmm.
And so the filter that he creates, he says Lello instead of Elmo.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of it. But the other part of it could also be is that he doesn't have the motor skills. He doesn't have the control to produce the
right.
adult version of Elmo.
Right.
but if he's trying, that's good.
Good. This is WHCR 90.3 on the FM dial, and we're talking about speech, language, communicative skills, and right involved in that is the hearing, and we're going to get to that in a moment. And our guest online is Dr. Teresa Signorelli. She is the clinic director of the Ruth Smedbeck Communication Learning Center at Marymount Manhattan College. That's down on 71st Street right here in good old New York City. And we're talking about how to identify, first of all, how to appreciate what a child is doing and attempting to do, and secondly, identifying problems that may or challenges that may be there that you can participate in correcting and enable your child or your grown-up to expect a better life. Now, let's talk about those areas where problems may occur that impede the learning ability in school.
I'm sorry, can you rephrase that?
Okay. We're talking about children
mm-hmm.
and understanding communicative skills
mm-hmm.
and with the intent of knowing or being aware of problems or challenges that the children may have in learning within the school
mm-hmm.
environment.
Well, knowing where they're having trouble is helpful because then you know where you can give them models, what you can foster, what ways you can talk to them.
Okay.
And some of the things that parents can do if you suspect that there's a problem is one, contacting a speech-language pathologist and getting an evaluation, and parents can do that privately, or they can do that either through early intervention or through the New York City Board of Education. Children ages 0 to 21 are eligible for free evaluations and services in speech and language development, occupational therapy if they have fine motor and sensory issues, physical therapy if they have grosser physical issues, counseling, and the like. As I said, if a child is age 0 to 3 and you suspect some trouble, you can contact early intervention agencies. And if the child is 3 up through 21, the New York City Board of Ed can provide those services for free as well.
Okay. Early intervention agencies or sources, what might they be in the area of Uptown? You may or may not know. If you don't, it's
yeah, but usually, since preschool is not mandatory in the United States, most preschools here are private. Most of them, if they're special needs preschools, are funded by early intervention and the Board of Ed.
Okay.
So my best suggestion would be to do Google search. I would think if I had had. That's information I can get for you at another point.
Okay.
But pediatricians are good resources.
Okay, good enough. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. The hearing part.
Mm-hmm.
The hearing part of our discussion. How does that come into play?
Well, you want to be watching for children, making sure that they're localizing, meaning if they hear sound that they're looking toward where the source is coming from, either the speaker or if it was a door that slammed or something like
gotcha.
That. Children, because of their anatomy, have a lot of trouble with ear infections. And if you get fluid in your ear or have an ear infection, the sound isn't going to get in as well as it could. So that could affect their speech and language development. A child who has trouble hearing isn't going to attend as well in a classroom setting where there's a lot of background information or background noise. They might not be able to filter it out as well. Or they might not be able to hear what the teacher's saying, so why should I bother focusing because I can't hear her? They're going to do something else. So keeping on top of that is smart.
I have a co-host here at WHCR, Charlie Wilson, who was over a school district here in Harlem back in the 60s and 70s, and they implemented hearing and hearing and eye exams, and the scores of the children increased dramatically because they were, and these are not tots, these are children in a middle school. Their scores went up, their ability to learn went up as the problems of either seeing properly or hearing properly were diagnosed. Very simple exams, he said, and something that's easily overlooked. Would you talk about your experience there?
I think the screenings are really important, and as I understand it, Mayor Bloomberg has suspended them. That I'm not sure, but I think that's something that parents might want to talk to their council people about. And even more than that, the hearing, the acoustics in the classroom are really critical, even for students who don't have trouble with speech and language development and comprehension. Background noise, for the best of us, can be distracting. And what the research shows in their classrooms with good acoustics, where there's sound absorption tiles and they can all hear and see the teacher well, do markedly better, significantly better than classrooms where they don't have this. So simple things, there's something called an FM unit that you can put in a classroom. It's initially intended for children who are hard of hearing, where they can hear better because the teacher's speaking, her voice or his voice gets amplified for them. The units, I think, are about $1,000. You could probably even get them for less. And to be able to put things like this in a classroom makes marked differences in how children perform.
Question. The utilization of music in the in the mix of learning, and when I'm saying the mix of learning, I'm talking about education. I'm stepping up a notch in terms of grammar school, and whether it's used in some classes or whether it's taught, how does that help a child learn?
Based on your experience, in lots of ways. Well, from a cognitive standpoint, music, we learn things by doing. We learn when events are multi-sensory. So when we experience things, so music, there's not just the content of, say, if they're learning about a concept in school, maybe they're learning about Thanksgiving. So if you sing about Thanksgiving, they can hear the music, they can feel the music, and that will help it register better in their brains, in their memory.
Got it.
Than just reading about it.
Yeah.
So it's more interactive, and that interactive aspect helps with the learning.
Okay.
And
it's not just hearing, but interactive.
Interactive, and it makes it fun for them. Because if they're not going to have fun, they're not going to be vested, they're not going to attend to it and learn. We want to make it understandable to them or enjoyable for them. So doing that through music, I think, can engage them in a way that just sitting and talking to them or sitting and reading, having them read, doesn't do.
Okay.
So I think it's critical.
Interactive goes under the banner of experiential learning. So you have what on a higher level, so-called higher level, we call theory and practice. You get theory, but the actual connect with learning something is the actual experience of doing it.
Yeah.
So the interaction is experiential learning. Okay. Now.
And it's critical. It's critical.
It's not a luxury. It's critical.
It's critical. It is not a luxury. It is absolutely critical. There's an old Chinese proverb that says something like, I hear something I forget, I read something I understand, I do something I learn.
Mm.
And if you think, anything that you do, if you're going to watch a cooking show and they're going to tell you how to make a fancy salad, they can tell you. But until you make that salad yourself and you're cutting the onions and you're smelling them and your eyes are tearing and you're doing all these actions, it's those motor actions, it's those sensory actions, that helps you remember how to do it. So the next time you do it, it'll be easier to do because it was such a rich experience.
Mm. Now, I'm...
So it's the same way for children when they're learning.
Okay. Learning and rewarding the child when they learn.
Mm-hmm.
Giving them a hug.
Mm-hmm.
Saying, oh, that's great, or clapping, applause, you're right there in your home.
Mm-hmm.
That conveys a sense of accomplishment to the child.
Mm-hmm.
And as we can give these to our young children, these moments where we applaud them, we're happy at their being able to do something. I don't care what the age is,
mm-hmm.
but I'm talking about coming up, that those accomplishments fortify a foundation
mm-hmm.
in the individual of self-confidence and
mm-hmm.
self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
I'm throwing that to you. I'm making a statement question for you.
Yeah, I agree with you, yeah.
Okay. Now, I'm going even further back when you said in utero that
mm-hmm.
the learning, I believe, I may be off in terms, but what I took it as, we can begin to teach a child
mm-hmm.
while the child, the woman can begin to teach the child while the child is in her womb.
In a sense, they can. I can't recall offhand about what age we see that they're hearing,
mm-hmm.
But I know that they are. We know that they are. So talking and singing, and certainly if a mom is talking and singing, the child's feeling those vibrations.
Mm-hmm. How does the child? I mean, this may be an area of study for you. It may not. How does a child in the womb know that a mother is talking to the child or to someone else?
That I don't know if the child knows that. But they are, they'll be able to hear something coming through. They'll be able to hear the information that say is coming from the outside. But mom, when she speaks, when we talk, our in a sense, our bodies vibrate a little.
Okay.
That's why when you hear yourself talk, you sound funny to yourself, because when you hear yourself on a tape, you're only hearing yourself through what we call air conduction through your ears. But when you're talking live, you're hearing yourself through your own ears, but you're also hearing yourself because your skull vibrates.
Okay.
So it's kind of that akin to that for the little ones in the womb.
Okay.
But so they're not understanding that we're talking to them, but they're just starting to hear and feel the sounds in their environment.
Whether we understand it or not, it is of benefit for the mother to talk to the child in her womb and for the father and the other children
mm-hmm.
to talk to the child in the womb.
Sure. Yeah.
Whether we understand what's going on or not,
mm-hmm.
when I say we, the adults or,
yeah.
you know, the so-called scientists in the world,
yeah.
there is a connection between the outside to the inside when it's done with love, or even
mm-hmm.
even if there's anger in the moment, that can be, that vibration can come through to the child. So you always want to have a peaceful situation around
yeah.
the mother.
Yeah, and talking. And so I'm not able to talk as much about what happens in utero,
mm-hmm.
But I do know that it's that they are perceiving things before they are born.
Right.
But certainly once they are born, talking with them, modeling for them, instead of asking them questions, it's just good for us to give models, to bring attention to things, to name things, repeat what we say, expand on what they say. Reading to them is so critical. Reading is so wonderful. Visiting new places, any place can be a learning experience. Going to the market, going to grandma's, taking a subway ride, just talking about what you're seeing and doing, encouraging them, giving them time to respond. And I think one of the important things to remember is that children are, when as they're learning their first languages or language, are just trying to figure out this system. They hear all these sounds that are connected together. They have to be able to see where word boundaries are so they can make sense of this stream of sounds. So when we provide models for them, we want to be one step above where they are.
Yes.
There's a psychologist, Vygotsky, who has a concept of the zone of proximal development. So you just want to give children information that's just a step above where they are. So if they're at the one word level, not to bombard them with long, long, long sentences, give them models of 1 to 2 words. If they're at the two-word level, give them 2 to 3 words in your models for them. And if they're nonverbal, you know, one word, single sound, singing.
You pull them along gently.
Mm-hmm. And if you've ever taken a foreign language in school, think about that first day in that class. Someone's talking to you, and it's just garbledygook.
Yeah.
You have no idea. You can't tell where the words are or not. Our kids are the same way. They've got to figure out where the word boundaries are. So we give them little bits at a time that they can process, but talking with them, modeling, reading is probably one of the most important things we can do.
Ladies and gentlemen, our guest online is Dr. Teresa Signorelli. She is the clinic director of the Ruth Smadbeck Communication and Learning Center at Marymount Manhattan College right here in New York City. If there is a question that you have for her, you can join in the conversation at 212-491-4685, 212-491-4685. We'll be very happy to take a call or two before we go off the air. Now, Teresa,
mm-hmm.
with older children, they are parents and guardians who are hearing this program, and they say, well, wow, you know, I think my child has a challenge in this area. I know my child is intelligent. What can I do to maybe identify some problems that, when I say problems, some developmental areas that weren't taken care of when they were much younger, and now they're in grammar school and, you know, I want to do something. I think that something is off.
Right, and that's, you bring up a good point, because a lot of times, because someone's not a good communicator doesn't mean that they're not intelligent, because there's different kinds of intelligence, and you can have a very, very smart person who can't put a sentence together very well, but that doesn't mean that they don't understand very complex concepts. I think speaking with with the schools, again, the Board of Ed has a system where children can be evaluated by speech-language pathologists, and they can look at what generally happens is that they're evaluated by a speech-language pathologist who's looking at their speech and language and their verbal cognitive abilities, and a psychologist who looks at their nonverbal cognitive skills. And we can see if there's a disconnect between the two. But having that evaluation by a professional who can find where the relative areas of weakness and the relative areas of strength are to see why a child might not be succeeding as they should be.
One of the great concerns in this area is that you've given us the progression of a child from 0 to 3 months on up to 18, 21 months, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
and that if there's something that might appear off,
mm-hmm.
there is the, and these are my words, the danger that mm-hmm. some of the clinicians or people who are to help us will prescribe a drug, whereas speech therapy does not necessarily involve drugs in order to correct something.
Correct. We approach things behaviorally, I think it's a matter of getting the word out on what speech and language development is like, and knowing that speech pathologists that were here, I think maybe people don't know about it as much. I think a lot of pediatricians with good intentions don't always give parents the best advice, telling them to wait, that, oh, he needs time, and sometimes
mm-hmm.
that's the worst advice you can give.
Mm-hmm.
That parents look and see what other children are doing, Educate yourself. You can go to, like I said, ASHA, the American Speech, Language, and Hearing Association.
Mm-hmm.
That's ASHA.org. And there's information there for parents about these language milestones. Or even with an older child, if they're not succeeding in school, it could be that they had some subtle language processing problems that didn't go detect, that were undetected, and it's interfering with their ability to thrive in school.
Mm-hmm. And just minor changes can make a world of difference.
A world of difference, yeah.
For that child,
mm-hmm.
or even for that older person. The older person should also pursue.
Absolutely.
The ASHA.org for their own benefit.
Yeah.
Now, talk about the actions of parents, good thinking, you know, good intention parents and guardians who would put earphones on a child and, in another case, have them listen to a cell phone conversation, you know.
Yeah, there's, every time I'm on the subway, I'm so unnerved and I want to just go handing my card out to people. You're really doing damage. Probably conversational speech is maybe around 60 decibels, probably about what I'm talking now. I'm not sure how it translates over the radio, but in person. But I believe around 90 decibels and up is when you start to do damage. So what happens, we have little hair cells in our cochlea, in our ear. We're born with the number that we're going to have. If something happens to them, if they die, if they get damaged because of noise, they don't grow back. And if they don't grow back, you're not going to hear as well. And so people are on the subways with these earphones, and I die because they're going to get to a certain age, and they're really going to have trouble hearing. And as we age anyway, we lose our hearing abilities. With everything, all of our faculties start to fail as we grow to be older and older. So that really is a concern. There's a lot of toys that I have in my practice. Or if children bring them in, I always put tape over the speaker part of it because it's just too loud for me. And I think that's something that parents really should be aware of how loud these things are, because once we damage those hair cells, that's it.
And we're talking about the younger children, and it happens with the older, well, the mature individuals who, they say if you can hear what's playing through that earphone, you're on the train or the bus or on the street, if you can hear it.
Oh, if I can hear it, then it's definitely too loud. It's definitely too loud. And unfortunately, sometimes those are noisy environments. And to be able to hear your music, you have to turn it up, but you're also putting yourself at good risk.
Hold on, Teresa.
Sure.
God bless you. Thank you for your call. You're on the air with Dr. Teresa Signorelli.
Another fantastic program. Thank you
pleasure.
So much.
Thank you, brother.
We as families in Harlem need this program. Can we have a number to the young lady that's speaking? She's dynamic.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you for your call.
I think you can check my website, which is myspeechdoctor.com. My number at Marymount, which might be the best way to reach me, is 212-774-0728. And one of the things I might add about the Marymount program is that our clinic here is a free clinic.
Mm.
And we run off donations. Our major funders are the Heckscher Foundation for Children and the Bird Drucker Aphasia Fund, and we have numerous other individual donors.
Mm-hmm.
We're a teaching program, so we're teaching people to be speech-language pathologists.
Mm.
We're a real small operation. Right now we operate 2 days a week. We are looking to expand in the fall to run 4 days a week, or probably actually a full schedule. And we are looking to help the community by providing speech and language services and hearing services to those in need.
This is fantastic.
Yeah. So
I didn't even know this bonus was at the end of the program.
Well, one of the other things that I'm hoping that the listeners think of for their older children who are in high school and maybe going to college is thinking about a career in speech-language pathology.
Yeah.
The Board of Ed and the world, we're really understaffed. We need more speech pathologists than we have. We have more children who are being diagnosed as being on the autism spectrum. We have people who are living longer, all those baby boomers who are going to be having trouble with hearing and communication and cognition. And it's, I'm not going to say it's recession-proof, but it's pretty close to that. I get job offers daily for speech to go other places and provide therapy.
Mm.
So it's really a wonderful vocation. It's a very rewarding vocation. If you speak another language too, we have so many people who speak so many different languages, and knowing different languages and cultures is a really critical part of what we do. So
this is wonderful. This is wonderful. Your number, once again, at Marymount Manhattan College is 212-774-0728. 212-774-0728. And the email, not the email, but the website is myspeechdoctor.com.
Mm-hmm.
And the name is Dr. Teresa Signorelli, Signorelli. And we are so very happy that you could join us this morning.
My pleasure.
It's been a great classroom, a beginner's classroom, and we intend to invite you back very soon.
I would love to come back, so please let me know what your needs are, and I can see what I can tailor to your audience, to your audience.
Excellent, and may God bless you and
God
your family
you
with
well.
A wonderful week. God bless
you. Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye now.